Listen local.
Hello, and welcome to the local edition on a Monday evening. I'm your host for this Monday evening, Patricio Roballo. We have Jason off today. Well, not really off, because he's going to come in the studio in a little while to talk about. Well, Jason, want to come in now? We're going to talk about we're in the midst of our Fall Fun Drive. We just started a Fall Fun Drive. Just tell you what's coming up in the program. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to Spotlight PA, Steve Caruso, about the pharmacy's middlemen. And an order that came out in Pennsylvania. And before that, we're going to talk to New York Focus about how small rural districts are dealing with paying settlements that happen within their districts due to abuse from staff and administration. But before that, let's have Jason come right in and let's talk about our Fall Fun Drive.
Hey there, Patricio. How you doing?
Doing good. You usually host on Monday nights, but I'm here.
It's true. Well, I mean, we're both kind of not here because we are pre-recording.
Yes.
I'm just mentioning that because the official live pitch kickoff of the Fun Drive is going to be tomorrow morning during Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno. And that's kind of like the debut of the live pitching. But we're kind of pre-gaming it here because we're just pre-recording a little earlier in the afternoon. And looking for your support at WJFFradio.org because it is our Fall Fun Drive. And it is not easy or cheap to make the local edition, to have two daily local news and talk programs right here on Radio Catskill. It's something that, you know, I would have never thought that we would have as quickly as we have. But to make it happen, we all are working on it. You, me, Tim, the entire crew here. And we need people's support to do the local edition in Radio Catskill.
Yeah, it's amazing that we have that much content. I look back at it when I look at the calendar. So, wow, we have so many guests in the morning and guests at night. It's a full day of local news that coming to your not only to the airwaves, but now we have a newsletter that collects all these news stories. And every week, right in your inbox, you get this newsletter.
And likewise, we've got all of our election coverage, talking not just to the candidates, which is a phenomenal thing. Also talking to people that are watching, you know, the legal challenges in Pennsylvania, talking to VoteBeat, talking to our news partners around our region to find out what's going on. And then all that goes up on our Election 2024 page. Go to WJFFradio.org. Make your donation there. But you could also hear any of the past candidate interviews, any of our election coverage, all up at our Election 2024 page. It's all at WJFFradio.org.
Yeah, it's right there. There's a button right there on the front page called Election 2024. If you want to go directly, you go to WJFFradio.org/election2024. And you can see all the election, not only the election interviews that we've done, also election news and information to keep you well informed before you head to the polls. We have a great voter's guide that's on the top of the election page there, not only for New York, but also for Pennsylvania, because the rules are different from each state.
And if you're curious about any of the logistics around voting, registration, timing, deadlines, poll times, there's also a link for Vote 411.
Yeah, definitely. So it's all that can happen, all happens on WJFFradio.org. Not only can you donate, sign up for the newsletter, find out information for the voting. It's the place to be now in 2024.
Not only can you donate, you should. Please donate now and help us with this Fall Fun Drive. Support amazing public radio right here in the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania.
Okay, let's get straight to the news. New York Focus. We have Bianca Fortiris from New York Focus on the phone with us now. New York districts grapple with financial and emotional aftermath of the Child Victims Act claims. A disturbing history of decades-old abuse is surfacing. Many districts, especially smaller ones, the rural ones, are facing the stark reality of multi-million dollar settlements tied to cases of child sexual abuse, putting a significant strain on their budgets. And Bianca from New York Focus is here to tell us more. So Bianca, what can you tell us about this, what the rural small districts are facing now?
Many of these cases stem from allegations of abuse, like you mentioned, that were many years ago. I found some as early as the 1940s and 1950s. So the alleged perpetrators very often no longer work in these school districts. In some cases, they've even died. And because the cases are so old, it's difficult for the schools at this point to investigate. Maybe the administrators who were there at the time are no longer there either. And so you're dealing with a totally new, different group of people. And so it's really difficult to assess the claims. Another issue is that in some cases, liability insurance might cover a settlement, but many districts at the time did not have insurance. And so there, some of them are doing some investigations to see if they had insurance claims that would have covered something like this. Many don't. And so they're having to pay for these settlements out of pocket, out of their regular budgets. And so there really are a number of challenges that districts are facing right now.
And your reporting, did any particular survivor stories or district responses stand out to you, especially significant or surprising?
Yeah, there were unfortunately some districts or some claims in which the survivors did report to administrators at the time. This happened not in every case, but this did come up in several cases that I looked at, where the children, they were children at the time, did try to tell other adults what was happening. And either the investigation wasn't very thorough or the adults just didn't believe them or tried to shut them down. The perpetrators were allowed to continue at the schools and unfortunately continue to abuse children. And at the beginning of the story, I included an anecdote about Vincent Festa, who's now died, but he was a school psychologist on Long Island. And the story is about a student who did report him at the time. And there was some district documents that pointed to this, but actually, sorry, I think I'm getting two cases confused.
Sure.
Let me rephrase that. But so at the beginning of the story, I include an anecdote about Vincent Festa, a school psychologist on Long Island who has since passed away. But one of the survivors in a deposition talked at length about how he had told his parents and they confronted school administrators. But Festa was allowed to stay. And unfortunately, this was a pattern that came up a few times where districts were warned, but they really took no action against the perpetrators.
Yeah, it's really disturbing too. When I read that this story about Vincent Festa, even the students had a nickname for him, Festa the Molester, which if you have a nickname attached to you, it seems like it would be like a common thing that this is happening. It's unknown. Not unknown, but folks should know about this. And it's also it's disturbing that the school allowed it to happen in a way of not transferring him or firing him.
Yeah, I would say, the nickname was used commonly around the school, and I would agree that would definitely be a red flag. But I think I think the administrators just didn't believe the student, unfortunately.
That was very unfortunate there. So now the school districts have to compensate survivors now, but how are they dealing with, especially with these smaller rural schools, how are the school districts surviving, compensating the survivors, rightly, and still maintaining the financial health of their own school district?
Yeah, so it's definitely a huge concern for many districts because these settlement amounts are quite large. They're in the millions generally. So some of them have turned to bond financing as a way to raise more money to help pay off the settlement. And some of them are also having to move funds from their reserve budgets that ideally would be used for current students, but they're having to now use them for settlements.
Wow. Like I said, it is having an effect on their budgets. Other programs could be in effect, but not because they have to pay off the survivors. What has this been in response from, or efforts have been postponed by lawmakers, if any, that sort of can help these districts manage the financial burden?
Jen Lunsford, an assembly member in East Rochester, has sponsored a bill that would actually create a state fund that would provide reimbursements specifically for schools and foster care agencies, because it's been a problem for some of those agencies as well. And so this fund would allow districts and these agencies who have had to pay out settlements, who don't have insurance that would cover the time period, they're allowed to file for reimbursements to help cover these claims. So she has been trying to push this for the last year or two. And she told me that she's going to work on it again in this budget session, because there's a real concern that these systems are failing, and the state is required, obviously, to provide an education to students and as well as provide foster care. And there's already been a couple of examples of foster care agencies who have gone bankrupt, in addition to school districts having to pay large settlements that affect their budgets. And so there's a concern because the state is obligated to provide these services legally, that either way, the state is going to be left holding the bag. And from her perspective, it makes sense to set aside this fund to help preempt the problem of these systems failing and help these agencies and districts basically cover the settlements instead of just waiting for the problem to get bigger.
Right. And so now that I guess you said some of these settlements are big, I'm looking at some of the numbers. I have one for $17 million, another one for, I'm looking at the one that says $17 million, which is just a lot of money for a settlement, which you mentioned this particular district, it's over 10% of its annual budget. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, there's another district where the final payout was for a number of cases, but for the final payout was more than $48 million. It's quite significant.
What have school districts have learned from what's happening now and lawmakers have learned? What can they take away from these abuse claims moving forward?
I think that one issue certainly is that I think having liability insurance is much more common now than it was decades ago, and that is potentially, certainly depending on the insurance policy, but that's certainly a way that would help deal with the fallout of this sort of thing. But I hope that I've covered sexual abuse before, and I really hope that people learn to take this seriously. I know there's been obviously general sensibility. Sorry. I think societally our general outlook has changed. I think that people take allegations of sexual abuse much more seriously, certainly than they did decades ago, especially after Me Too. And so I hope that people listen to children and they take these claims seriously. And I know there's been more trainings in schools and whatnot how to deal with this thing. So hopefully that this does not continue to be a problem in the future.
The folks are taking things more seriously when it happens in school, when it comes to sexual claims or what's happening with now with the school shootings. Things like this are no longer, I guess folks are not turning a sort of a blind eye or not believing the students when it comes to things like this.
Yeah, hopefully we continue to believe survivors.
Bianca, before we go, is there anything else that we have not touched on you want folks to know about your article or anything coming up that you are working on?
I guess one thing about this story in particular is just the magnitude of how many claims there were statewide total. For CVA claims, there were nearly 11,000. And those are just people who decided to make claims within the last few years since the CVA was filed. And for school districts in particular, there are hundreds of districts across the state. And nearly, there were so many districts that have been affected by this. Hold on, let me get the specific number. Mm-hmm. The New York State Council of School Superintendents actually estimates that one in three schools has faced at least one claim under the Child Victims Act, which is, it's a lot of school districts. So it's really, it's a widespread thing.
Yeah, I mean, that number is disturbing. And you mentioned those are just the ones who have come forward and put claims in. Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder how many out there who have not put claims in and who are dealing with this. It's a terrible thing to think about.
Absolutely.
You know, you go to school and you want to learn and things like that. And you have to deal with things that are happening. So,
School should be a safe space. And unfortunately, there are adults who abuse children in these schools.
Yeah. Very tragic to think about. Bianca, thank you so much for talking to us, letting us know about your reporting and what's going on with the school districts when it comes to settling decades old abuse claims. We'll talk to Bianca Fortes, a New York reporter from New York Focus. Thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bianca, for that. You can find that article right now on our website at wjffradio.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Focus Spotlight PA. Don't forget, it's up for a fun drive.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
For years, the culture at the Secret Service has been, you ride your horse until it dies and then you eat it. You hear that same line from different agents there, still today. But in order for the Secret Service to turn this corner, it's going to have to change that.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Well, Welcome back to the Local Edition on Radio Catskill. I'm your host for this Monday evening, Patricio Rovallo. It's a full fun drive. And if you like this show and want to support it, think about donating at WJFFradio.org. It's that easy. Open 24 hours, 7 days a week. Log in or visit the site, find the full fun drive button and donate. Or just look for the donate button on top of the website and donate. Your donation helps keep us on the air. If you enjoy shows like you're listening to now, the Local Edition and Radio Catskill that happens on 10 o'clock every morning, Monday through Friday. So if you're enjoying this program and all the programs that we have, not only the talk programs and news programs that we have, but all the music programs that we have on the station, unique music shows like the mixtape, virtual soundscapes with Matt Hurtado talking about video game music that's happening now in the scene and also talking to video game creators, Connect the Dots. We have the Ambient Barn, all these new shows that came out recently that really, I feel, brings really a human algorithm to music. That's how I'm discovering new music, is listening to these shows and listening to these hosts who are really passionate. If you have not met any of these hosts, and if you do meet them in fairs or coming to our station or passing, just know that these volunteers who do these music shows are so dedicated to their shows. It's amazing. It's inspiring. So if you want to support that or support this show or any show, visit WJFFradio.org through our For Fun Drive. Now, one of the stories we have coming up for you is from Spotlight PA. We have Stephen Caruso on the phone with us now to talk about a recent story about a Pennsylvania state audit that scrutinizes the pharmacy benefit managers, the PBMs, who are the middlemen in the drug supply chain. The audit, led by Auditor General Tim DeFoor, accuses PBMs of charging $7 million in hidden fees to the state's Medicaid program due to poor oversight by the Department of Human Services. So Stephen Caruso is on the phone with us now to help make sense of it all. Stephen, welcome to the program. So what can you tell us about this audit?
Yeah, pharmacy benefit managers aren't even being scrutinized in Pennsylvania. It's a national thing. There's been bills introduced in dozens of states, policies that are being implemented. There's federal legislation, but in Pennsylvania specifically, our Auditor General released a report in late August that found that $7 million in undisclosed fees had been charged by PBMs to pharmacies in 2022, and that was just in 2022. Now, these PBMs are those fees were charged within the state's Medicaid system. So this is just healthcare for low-income people that the state provides. And this these fees were banned under a 2020 law if they were not disclosed. And what happened here is this PBM didn't disclose that they were charging pharmacies these fees, known as transmission fees, which are basically them just putting the equivalent of just, oh, here's, you know, a dollar for us transmitting the cost of, for basically being the middleman in this transaction between the pharmacy and the state who's insuring the folks who needed the drugs in the first place. What this led to is, from Auditor General DeFoor, who is up for re-election this year, is the claim that the Department of Human Services, which oversees Medicaid, wasn't doing a good enough job because this law was being flagrantly violated. Now, DHS just said the problem was the PBM didn't tell them. And it also, the PBM is technically a subcontractor, so it gets into this wonky level, though. But it is effectively a question of, is the state properly regulating the Medicaid program, which is billions of dollars? So $7 million isn't a lot, but I think the point is also just, if there's $7 million here, where else is there $7 million, $7 million, $7 million? And that could add up to a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse.
In this election year, how do you see the timing of this audit affecting the political landscape with the upcoming election?
I think this is a wonky issue, so I can't say that this is the most pressing issue. But at the same time, audits are – the Auditor General, one of its main powers is choosing what it pays attention to and what it doesn't. Now, this audit was launched last year with the support of DHS, the agency that is overseeing Medicaid. So, you know, it's released a couple months before an election. I think you can – Malcolm Kenyatta, DeFore's Democratic opponent, who's also a state rep, made the case that this was politically timed. This was just designed to make Josh Shapiro look bad, the governor's office, the administration look bad, and to get DeFore in the news. This audit was started with support of the administration, like I said. And I think that PBMs, healthcare costs, PBMs are an easy target. Healthcare costs are a common complaint. Who hasn't struggled to pay a prescription or find a doctor's appointment? I think audits are always the very act of choosing what the audit means you chose to do that versus something else. It's a political act in a way. But I also think that there's a lot of evidence in DeForest Corner for there's almost the reaction to DeFore dropping the audit almost appears politicized to try and make DeFore appear incompetent. One Democratic lawmaker said he was snookered in because there's a dispute over what DeFore called those fees versus what they are. It's a very wonky dispute that gets into healthcare policy, but I can just say overall, I think just overall the audit was politicized, whether you're attacking the audit's release or you're the one presenting the audit as it was.
And so let's talk about how does this affect the consumers, those who actually are going to the pharmacy mm-hmm. and picking up their medications? Does it mean mm-hmm. increase in prices or a lack of medication?
This is where it is really hard because PBMs will say that their role in this whole healthcare ecosystem is reduced costs. PBMs only exist to be hired by your employer or a medical plan to manage the pharmaceutical benefit, pharmaceutical benefits. That's why PBM. What that effectively means is they're the ones looking at all the drugs on the market and saying, this is what we'll pay for. This is what we won't. These are circumstances where that could change. Their job is to try and keep costs down by just rationing drugs to depending on who might need what. And the idea is then you're not paying for the most expensive treatment for something that could be handled by a lower level drug, a less expensive drug. That's at least the thought behind them. But PBMs have been brought into these very large healthcare conglomerates like United Healthcare, and PBMs have started owning pharmacies. So it gets to the situation where the PBM will almost be like, what they can do is encourage the use of their own pharmacies that they own by giving those pharmacies a better price from the insurer for the same drug. If you go to your local drugstore independently owned, they might get less money for dispensing the same drug to you as if you went to a CVS. So in particular, pharmacies are outraged about this because it hurts their bottom line. And as for the consumer, I think where it really can become an issue is, in general, this much market power in this vertically integrated healthcare system means PBMs are a black box. We don't know what they're always doing. We don't know the charges they're putting on things. The price that you're paying is still dictated by the pharmacy you go to, but how they get to that price is influenced by a ton of things of the supply chain, and PBMs are a huge part of that. And the FTC itself released a report that said this sort of a conglomeration of companies and healthcare providers can be bad for the consumer and drive prices up.
It seems like in your article, there was a little somewhat of finger pointing about who, because they failed to report these transmission fees. So do you think that there is a problem with transparency or this was sort of an oversight that just failed to report because they forgot or didn't realize it?
It does seem like there is a common complaint from both like ideological conservatives and ideological liberals all over this political spectrum is that there isn't enough transparency in the healthcare industry. It's a very opaque industry. It's an industry we only interact with at our worst moments when we are struggling to find out what's wrong with us. We might even be at risk of death. And the prices you get, you're not probably going for a rational decision-making of who's the best doctor, what's the best medicine. You just want somebody to tell you what to do so you don't feel sick. There are bills in the Pennsylvania legislature to make hospital pricing more transparent. So I'm saying all of this to just say, I think, yeah, that the transparency does seem to be a real issue. And as I said, PBMs, they're private companies. What they do to price is a bit of a black box. Pharmacies, when they would sign contracts with PBMs to dispense medicine to patients, because that's effectively how they work. They keep access to patients for a certain employer, a certain insurer. When they sign those contracts, there's even like sometimes gag orders within it. Like, you can't talk about this. You can't reveal the terms of these contracts.
Right.
And as a reporter, anytime I see that, my alarm bells go off. I think, and now on the government side, a big point that DeFore made is if it's a public contract, even if it's a subcontract, how could DHS not go and audit that result? The government should ideally be trying to figure out what is happening within its contract, not just waiting for somebody to tell them what's up. I think that's a back and forth. The DHS has their opinion, DeFore has his, but I do think taking that step back, like transparency is a big issue in healthcare. And I think everybody, Democrats and Republicans who want to reform healthcare, are usually trying to push for more transparency. Also, I'm a policy reporter. I haven't dug all the way into this healthcare issue, but I do think that this And that's fundamentally the argument that you make against the way PBMs work right now, is that this concern of they are vertically integrated, they control 4 out of 5 steps for a drug to be manufactured to get to your cupboard. They can throw a bunch of prices on. They can do a lot of stuff that we don't really know, and that could drive the price up. But fundamentally, what PBMs say is that, as I said, they exist to make sure that the cheapest possible drug is being paid for when it is when it makes the most sense. And if you have to ratchet up to a stronger drug, it's only being paid for when after a doctor has evaluated your case and you've tried the lower level drug. It's, you know, same idea as step therapy. It's all kind of this idea of like, how do we make sure the people who need care get that care, but not too early, so we're not throwing a $1,000 solution at a $10 problem. And I think the main problem is just if you're sick and you don't really probably care too much if it's a $10 solution or a $1,000 solution, you just want to feel better. And I think that's why healthcare economics get so screwy, and they're also just so hard to understand.
Steven, anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about this article?
It's an election year, and that means that everything's going to be politicized, even stuff that the people themselves who are trying to make the point might not totally understand. And it took me about 2 weeks to figure my way through all this stuff, and I'm happy I did.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, and I'm glad that you were able to do it, because we made it so easy to understand on the Spotlight PA's website. So we're talking to Steven Caruso from Spotlight PA. Thank you so much for talking to us, letting us know about this situation that's happening in Pennsylvania. I do appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. Happy to talk about it.
And that does it for the Local Edition on a Monday evening. If you ever miss a show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Go to WJFFradio.org, not only to see the interviews that we do and to sign up for our newsletter, because that's really important. You want the news in your inbox. If you want your news in your inbox, then you need to sign up for our newsletter. But more importantly, we have the Fall Fun Drive happening. You could donate online at WJFFradio.org. You could do it on your phone. You could do it on the computer. You could do it on your tablet. Or if you want to give us a call, you can. 845-482-4141. But donating online is so easy. You can do it at any time, anywhere. We'll be back tomorrow doing this all over again. Radio Chatskill begins at 10 a.m. Coming up for you on Radio Chatskill, stories about Project Identity. Alive again for Veterans and Families event. We're going to have an interview from Sullivan Rock the Vote concert. One of the founders of the event. It's going to be, I talked to her last week, and we'll be doing the interview tomorrow. Earlier today, you heard Cassie Moon do a little performance. You can catch her performance on our social media. Check out our Instagram stories. Also, Tuesday, we have Moving Towards Health with Maggie Fitzpatrick. And then on the Local Edition, later on that night, we have Carter Walker. And also a story about La Villas was a destination for a lot of Spanish and Latino Hispanic folks, beginning from the 20s all the way to the late 80s. I talked to two professors who are doing the Latino Catskills, which is a digital humanities project that aims to document and preserve the often overlooked presence of Latinos in the New York Catskills region in the late 19th century through the 1970s. So I have the interview tomorrow on the Local Edition. So again, our Fall Fun Drive is happening. Donate online at WJFFradio.org. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
Every weekday morning at 9, NewsHour from the BBC brings you the most important international news stories. NewsHour helps you understand a complex world. Stay informed with NewsHour from the BBC, weekday mornings at 9 on Radio Catskill.